In Chilak Aleph of Sheilos Hutshuvos Mimamakim, Simon Lamed Rav Oshri deals with the following. He says that after the war, when the Jews had already been saved, they saw in Kovno and its surrounding communities that there had been tremendous destruction, not only from a physical point of view, but the Germans had also, as is well known, had sought to destroy Yiddishkeit, destroy any connection to Torah, to mitzvos. Shuls had been destroyed, Bati Medrash had been destroyed, and the Sfarim had been destroyed. He says that in the Kovno ghetto, it was impossible to find any Sfarim at all. Amazing thing. Kovno, which was an Ir V'Ein B'Yisrael, so he says that there wasn't any Gemara, there wasn't a Siddur, a Chumash, a Nach, absolutely nothing. An astonishing kind of statement that reflects that this was clearly an element of the Nazi hatred towards Klal Yisrael, was a hatred towards Torah as well. So finally, he said, after several weeks, he found several boxes full of Sfarim in a certain storage area. These Sfarim had been confiscated from the Jews in Hamburg. What happened was the Nazis had deceived the Jews there and told them that they were going to relocate them to another place, and therefore that they should gather together their belongings. And then they took the Jews to what he refers to as the Mivtzar HaTshi'i, the ninth fort, which was outside of Kovno. That was a place which is referenced over and over again in Rav Oshri's Tshuvos, a place where Jews were slaughtered by the Nazis, and the Jews of Hamburg were taken to that place, to this ninth fort, and obviously their possessions were then taken away to other places. And he found that there were a number of boxes of Svarim which had been taken away together with the rest of the belongings. And then he took these Svarim, he took them to the Beis Medrash. He refers to a particular Beis Medrash called Beis Medrash El Hoizman, and then people were able to use them. Then, Rav Oshri says, the Shamish of the Beis Medrash, somebody by the name of Reb Ruvain, he told him tearfully that he saw that the non-Jews were wrapping up various different food items, fish and other things, with pages from Sifrei Kodesh, from the Shas, the Rambam, Tur, and Shulchan Aruch, and these had been brought from the storehouse of Tfus Reim Vilna, which is famous publishers of the Vilna Shas. So he wanted to know, the question arose that Rav Oshri had to deal with, was there some kind of obligation that they had to go track down the source of these pages from Sifrei Kodesh, and then to purchase it, to pay for it in order to save them from Bizayon. And then the second question would be, if they would save them from Bizayon and purchase them, what should they do with them at this point in time? So Rav Oshri then has to deal with a couple of questions. Number one, the status of pages from Sifrei Kodesh, and what to do with them if they can't be used for learning purposes. Rav Oshri starts the tshuva with a mishnah at the beginning of Perek Kol Kisvei Mesecha Shabbos Daf Kuf Tes Vav Amid Beis. The mishnah there says Kol Kisvei Kodesh Metzil Nason Mipnei Adleiko, that you're allowed to save, if there's a fire on Shabbos, so you're allowed to save Kisvei HaKodesh, you're allowed to save Torah Shebichsav, and even if it's written in another language, you're also allowed to save it. And then, he quotes a critical line from the Rosh, that the Rosh says that that nowadays, even though in the time of the Gemara, when they only were allowed to write Torah Shebichsav, so Torah Shebaal Peh would not be written down. But the Rosh says, "Hidnash on Kosvim Torah Shebaal Peh." Nowadays, we write Torah Shebaal Peh because of Eis Lasos LaShem Eferus Arasecha. So therefore, This is considered to be part of the Torah that you would be allowed to save mibliad leka. Now this din, that you need a special dispensation in order to save the Kisvei HaKodesh, that's based upon the following. It's based upon the concern that Chazal had that if you would allow people to save things in time of a fire, a person is bohu lamamono, and consequently a person might, in trying to save everything, might then put out the fire. So they wanted to limit actually what the person would be able to save. Comes up later in the Gemara as well, on Kuf Yud Zayin Umid Beis, that the Gemara says there that you're only allowed to save a certain amount of food. And it's for this reason. Because again, if a person is so intent on trying to save everything, then the person's going to be rushed, and then they're not going to have the composure, the presence of mind to remember they're not allowed to put out a fire on Shabbos. And also, sometimes there would be a certain leniency involved in this if they didn't make the proper kind of what we call Eruv, and there would be an Isamid Rabbanon to carry into a particular area from the house. Nonetheless, they relaxed that restriction in order to be able to save the Kisvei HaKodesh. But what's important over here is the Rosh expands the Kisvei HaKodesh to Torah Shebaal Peh as well. It's based upon the famous the famous principle that we have, that even though Torah Shebaal Peh originally was not supposed to be written down, but in the time of Chazal they saw that the Torah was going to be forgotten. There's a principle, Eis Lasos Lashem Eferus Arsecho, which means that in a situation such as that, you are able to do something which initially would have been prohibited, but then to save and to perpetuate the Torah in general, you need to write down the Torah Shebaal Peh, and therefore that's the reason why we write down Torah Shebaal Peh nowadays. Most of the Torah that we have nowadays is Torah Shebaal Peh, right? Most of the Torah we have is not Torah Shebichsav, and we assume that we basically treat that as mutter lechatchila. And the Rosh is saying that this is considered to be something which takes on intrinsic significance, and therefore you're allowed to save it from a fire. The Rosh says this elsewhere as well. The Rosh famously, gives a certain status to the writings of Torah Shebaal Peh in regard to Keniza, which we're going to get to shortly. So this is paskind in the Shulchan Aruch. The Shulchan Aruch says this: you're allowed to save it from a fire. You're allowed to save it, he says, from Makom HaTurfa, which means to place, say, a place where it's going to be a place which is inappropriate. Something about the place which is going to cause a bizoyon, a degradation to the Torah. So you're allowed to take it away from that place as well. And these leniencies apply, and therefore, says Rav Asheri, it would seem clear that this is saving it from a Beis HaTurfa. They're using the Svarim, the pages of the Svarim, in order to wrap up fish and other disgusting kinds of things, and therefore that would be considered permissible. Now, that's the first point. Second point in regard to this is the obligation of Geniza. He quotes the from the Rambam that initially the obligation of Geniza is the obligation to avoid the mitzvah in the Torah that you are not allowed to destroy the shemus hakadoshim. If a person were to destroy shemus of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the person would receive malchus. This is the Rambam in Perek Vav of Hilchas Yisodei HaTorah. And the halacha that flows from this, the Rambam writes later, is in regard to Kisvei HaKadosh Shebalu o Shekosven Yiganzu, that if you have Kisvei HaKodesh, then you have to put them into Geniza. So the idea behind Geniza, initially, the initial obligation regarding Geniza is to protect the name of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, right, from being destroyed. So that's the general initial obligation, but then we find a discussion amongst the poskim as to whether the obligation of Geniza also extends, or the prohibition that it's based upon, does it also extend to grama of Mechikas Hashem? Let's say, for example, a person didn't cause the name of HaKadosh Baruch Hu to be blotted out, to be destroyed directly, but it was through done in an indirect kind of way. So he quotes a machlokas amongst the Achronim in regard to this. There were some Achronim that argued that the iser of mechikas Hashem, of destroying Hashem's name, is only when it's done directly, derech hashchasa. But if it's done in an indirect kind of way, then it would be permissible. On the other hand, he quotes a number of achronim who say that that's not true, who say that even through grama it would be prohibited. And after, again, quoting a number of achronim got to this, he quotes from Rav Eliezer Gordon, the tshuvas of Rav Eliezer Gordon, who wonders why the Torah in the Shulchan Aruch, why they wouldn't have mentioned such a leniency in regard to this, that you're allowed to cause mechikas Hashem indirectly, that grama is permissible. That's not mentioned in the Shulchan Aruch. He says, because, in fact, the halacha is that you're not allowed to cause mechikas Hashem, and he quotes the halacha in regard to this, that if you have a Sefer Torah, that Shibola, Sefer Torah, which has become worn away and no longer can be used, you put it into Geniza and a Kli Cheres, you put it into an earthenware vessel that will protect it, and then you bury it. So he says, what do you see from here? When you put it into the earthenware vessel, which is going to be durable and remain for a long time, you're protecting it from even grama of mechikas Hashem. You don't want it even to be done indirectly, and therefore you have to, you know, go to an extreme in order to protect the Sefer Torah Shibola. So he says that all these poskim seem to say pretty clearly, strongly, that even grama of mechikas Hashem is prohibited. For this reason, what one should do is when one has svarim, sidurim, etc., that have a status of kedusha, and there's an obligation of geniza, so you should not just leave it somewhere or another where it will get destroyed. You should not just do something or nothing, whatever, take an approach in which something might happen to you. You have to actively make sure to protect it from degradation, from bizayon, and therefore that's the reason why he notes that generally the view of the achronim is that you put these kinds of things, even if it's Torah Shebaal Peh, you put them into Geniza. That's the general approach which is accepted by the poskim. He mentions that in the Shelus Tshuvas Sholu Meshiv, he says that this was the custom in Lvov, that they would be gonez the svarim by a Talmud Chacham, that this would be done on a periodic basis. And other it's mentioned in various different poskim, they would have such a custom, that sometimes once a year they would get together and they would take the Gneza, and they would actually, you know, it would be an event in which the community would bury the Gneza. So, in any case, he says this is what should be done in this circumstance as well, that they should, Rav Asher give a psak, that they should try to redeem, to buy back these pages, whatever they could find, and then afterwards they would put them into Geniza. He says that this was a tremendous Kiddush Hashem, that the people who had survived the war, who obviously had next to nothing, they actually, as he puts it, set aside of their rations of food and sold it in order to be able to get some money together and to be able to purchase these pages of these Sfarim in order to put them into Geniza. And he said that this was, in regard to how to do the Geniza, he says this was a custom which existed in Lithuania, based upon the Horah, the Psak of Rabbi Yitzchak Hanan, who was considered by many to be the Posek Ador of his time, in the 19th century. So he says that they followed in Lithuania, they followed the Psak, that they would gather together all the Svarim from the Beis HaKnesses, etc., and they would put them into bags, and they would bring them to the Beis HaKfaros and bury them in the ground. And he says they would bury it in a kever osim mikrashim kamoteva. They would make some kind of wooden box, and they would bury it there inside of this box. He mentions that this is true, that you have other poskim as well, who also note that you don't have quite the same obligations as you find in the regular Sefer Torah, and you're able to bury it even to a depth of a tefach, as opposed to other times when you have to bury to a depth of at least three tefachim, It has to be three tefachim under the ground, but in this case, you wouldn't have to go to such an extreme. So he says this is what they did with these tefachim. I'll just note that one thing which Rav Ashri does not clarify fully, he seems to get to this at the end of the tshuva, but he doesn't say this explicitly, is that the poskim will mention a fundamental distinction between two different kinds of things that are buried. If you have items such as tefillin or sefer Torah mezuzos, which have become posel and or have worn away, and they have to be buried, so those items have intrinsic kedusha by the fact that you write a parsha of the Torah on cloth. So that gives it a status of intrinsic kedusha. And then in halacha, you have these various different halachos in regard to something which is guf kedusha, and then you have tashmish kedusha, right? Let's say, for example, the mantle of a sefer Torah, which is touching the sefer Torah, is considered to be a tashmish of kedusha. Then you have things which are a tashmish, the tashmish, they don't touch the sefer Torah directly, they're on the outside. But in any case, those are particular halachos that come up in regard to these kinds of items which have intrinsic kedusha. In regard to those items, the poskim say that you are obligated to bury it in a kli cheres, which is what's mentioned in the Gemara, or the equivalent thereof. In other words, you have to protect it from being destroyed. And this is actually, Rav Ashri doesn't make this distinction clearly, but this is what comes out from the halacha. There you have an obligation to prevent it, to go to an extreme, to prevent it even from grama of destruction. And therefore you put it into something which is going to last for a very long time, right? A strong earthenware vessel is going to last for a very long time, is going to protect the Sefer Torah, the mezuzah, the tefillin, which have deteriorated and no longer can be used, so it's going to protect it for a very long time. However, as Rav Ashri himself says at the end of the tshuva, it's different in regard to svarim and sidurim, because of the fact that they are not written on cloth, in the same way between gemaras and other things, they're not written on cloth, so therefore, even though we treat it with a level of kedusha, and you want to protect it from any degree of bizayon, you want to, the opposite, you want to give it kavod, right? So therefore, we put it into what we call gneza, we call it shemos, that's a generic, general term that we use. It's not shemos per se, right? It's not the names of HaKadosh Baruch Hu per se. What we're protecting it from is, it's kind of bizarre because we do attribute kedusha to it and we treat it with respect. But nonetheless, as he says, they would put it into bags. And they would put it, they would bury these bags in the Beis HaKfaros. The reason I'm mentioning this is because it is an important point that sometimes people can get mixed up and they can think, there's one thing called Geniza, or one thing called Shemos, and then they put everything inside of it. And then, as a consequence, you could have a situation in which, in a shul or in a yeshiva or whatever else, that some place where they're collecting Geniza and Shemos, and they will take, let's say, for example, a person might have old pair of tefillin they can't use anymore. They might have mezuzahs which are not usable. And they might put it together with the rest of the Geniza, and then it's taken away afterwards. And what's done with it? It's usually not put in some kind of kli cheres and buried in the way that was described in Chazal, in the way that you should bury these things which have intrinsic kedusha. It'll be buried by putting it into bags, either plastic bags or paper bags, and then it's buried somewhere in the ground. In regard to Sefer Torah, Tefillin, Mezuzos, then there's an obligation to bury it in a much more careful kind of way, in a way which is not so simple. In other words, you have to track down some kind of receptacle, which they have someplace in Eretz Yisrael, for example, they will have them, that they have these kind of receptacles for burying Sefer Torah and Tefillin Mezuzos, but it's not something so easy to come by. And if a person has these kinds of articles of Kedusha, and needs to bury them, then they have to make sure that they're going to bury them in a kedasvik din, in a proper kind of way. Can't be put together with the rest of Geniza and then buried in the ground in paper, plastic bags. That would not be sufficient. The halacha is, you put it in the kli cheres, because as Rav Ashri says, there you have a real obligation to make sure that it's not going to, it's going to do what is humanly possible to prevent it from bizayon. That's just something which is important, which emerges in the tshuva on a halacha lemaisa level, because he says that the custom was that they would bury it, you know, they would put it into bags and bury it based upon the Pesach of Yitzchak Chanan. He says this was the custom in Lithuania. He doesn't really fully explain why there's no obligation of klicheres, which he'd referenced before. So I just wanted to make that point. In any case, this is what they did. The Jews in the Kovno ghetto really, you know, were moser nefesh in order to try to give kavod to these pages of Svarim and of Sidurim that had been subject to Bizoyim.